Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect workshop. And today's workshop is the role of immuno-oncology in the treatment of melanoma. And today's program is part three of a three-part series on living with advanced skin cancer. Today's effort is a collaborative program between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 654 participants, and you come from all of the United States. And we also have international participants from Canada, Tunisia, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world. And it's a credit to you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. Now, today's program has been made possible by Bristol-Myers Squibb, Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, Novartis Oncology, and an independent educational grant from Merck & Company, Inc. And I really want to thank them for their support of this entire program and series, and also I want to thank them for their collaborative corporate partnership in making this series possible. Now, I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's information about our speakers and the topics they'll be addressing. There is information also about all of our collaborating organizations as a resource for you. These are free resources for you to call in addition to Cancer Care. And there is an evaluation form, and I would ask you all to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. Your feedback really helps us develop programs that are more meaningful for all of you. You tell us the topics, and we're then more able to provide programs that are more fitting for what your needs are. So please do take a moment and complete that evaluation form. Indeed, our program today is one that many of you have asked us to do a more expansive program on this topic, and so here we are, and we have done this program. And so, again, we rely on your feedback. Now, we have wonderful speakers today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Gregory Daniels. Dr. Daniels is Associate Clinical Professor of Medicine, University of California, San Diego, Rebecca and John Morris Cancer Center. And Dr. Daniels is going to present an overview of melanoma, current standard of care and new treatment approaches, harnessing the immune system in treating melanoma, the emerging role of immuno-oncology, and questions to ask your healthcare team about your care. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Gregory. Dr. Daniels, I'm sorry. Dr. Hey. Daniels.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Cancer Care for doing this. I think these are incredibly valuable, and appreciate the opportunity to participate. So let me start, because everybody on the call, I'm sure, has different things that they're interested in, and of course we have way too much to cover in half an hour, and I have to give an overview of melanoma very briefly. Melanoma, like all cancers, come from a cell that's gone bad, and in this case, melanocytes. These are the pigment-making cells that inhabit our body. And most of the time when we think of melanomas, we think about skin melanomas because that's visible to us. It's also the most common type of melanoma. But these melanocytes, which can go awry, also occur in our eye, so these are ocular melanomas, and in our GI tract, so mucosal melanomas. But today, I think we're all just going to focus on the most common, which is cutaneous melanoma. And one of the reasons to do that is over the last 100 years, the incidence for this problem has dramatically increased. Our understanding has increased, too. We're getting insights into the genetics of the disease, links to other cancers, but the change in incidence is obviously not related to the change in our gene pool currently. That doesn't happen that fast. There's an environmental factor, which how to best modify that is an ongoing debate right now. So cutaneous melanoma is going to be the focus. It's increasing in incidence and so importance. Current standard of care, I'll put a plug in for something that is not a treatment, but, well, in a sense it is. It's early detection and awareness. And you're on the call today to learn about all the great new things But it would be wonderful if we don't have to employ these great new things. Early detection, being aware of your skin, telling other people about skin cancers in education is very important. When we do find a lesion that's concerning, the thing to do is to cut it out. I'll also not really discuss adjuvant treatments and jump right to what we do for a metastatic melanoma or melanoma that's spread that the surgeon or radiation oncologist cannot control. The reason this conference is getting a lot more or a lot larger is that the sea change, and it's an appropriate word because our thinking of melanoma has completely changed over the last 5 to 10 years. And that's, as the title of this discussion is, the immuno-oncology approach. This is a new way of thinking about cancer, and melanoma has not just changed itself, but it's changing how we're thinking about a lot of solid tumors. And the growth of therapies is hard to keep up. In the last 3 years, we've had 4 new treatments or 4 new medications approved for patients with advanced melanoma. And they fall on the 2 general categories, targeted therapies and immune modulators. Targeted therapies are those that are based on the genetics of the tumor itself. So this is where you might see personalized medicine, sequencing genes, and we now have inhibitors, as we've discussed on past calls, such as vemurafenib, dabrafenib, and a MEK inhibitor called trametinib. And so addressing these driver mutations have increased dramatically survival of patients, had clinical benefits for symptom control, et cetera. That said, those are wonderful drugs, room for improvement always. However, immune modulation is starting to overshadow even these agents. Interleukin-2, the first in this group, was approved back in the 90s, so it's an older drug, worth mentioning because it has a lot of data in it. It led the field forward in showing us that immune therapies in select patients could lead to durable long-term remissions for patients. It's for those patients with advanced disease that are healthy otherwise, and it's appropriate at centers that have experience with IL-2. 2011 marked kind of the beginning of new treatments coming in, and ipilimumab, or Yervoy, which is an outpatient immune modulator, was approved, again, because it also showed durable remissions and a change in overall survival for patients. And now we're getting guidelines that are changing every 3 to 4 months as new things and new understandings come into our regimen. And I'll just direct people to an organization such as NCCN. They have a website that lists out current treatments and standard of care practices. Harnessing the immune system in treating melanomas. Our general understanding has allowed us to redirect the immune system. This is a little bit different thinking than we have been for years when we were trying to harness the immune system to go out and destroy. We've come to realize that there is a natural immunity in all of us, that the immune system recognizes tumors, but because the tumor has evolved, evaded, and usurped some of the functions of the immune system, what we've needed to do instead of just enhancing an immune response is actually redirect it. And that's where these exciting drugs that you'll hear about next come into play, where we're learning how to redirect that. Ipilimumab is an example of that, and there are a couple agents that are near approval, one target of which is called programmed death receptor, or PD, PD-1, and it's ligand PD-L1. Several companies, I think the last count I had was 7 companies, are rushing to get these agents into clinical practice because in clinical trials, they've shown some remarkable findings for melanoma patients. And as I said, melanoma is leading the way to other solid tumors. PD-1, CTLA-4, LAG-3, on and on. These are just markers or molecules that are are governing the relationship of the immune system with the tumor. And now that we've been able to identify these things, we can modulate them and target them. So these are all in a category of immune modulators. Adoptive cell therapy deserves a call out too. This is exciting work that continues at the NCI and other institutions such as MD Anderson and UCLA. But adoptive cell therapies are, again, harnessing the immune system and overriding some of those checks and balances that the tumor's taken advantage of. And this is spilled over, again, into other tumors such as chronic lymphocytic leukemia, CLL, a very common blood cancer. The last task that I was made or asked to comment on were questions for your healthcare team and about your care. And this is just vital that patients continue to educate themselves about all the new therapies. I can tell you that patients coming into clinic have excellent questions. And the ones that I think you should challenge your provider with are, what are the goals of my care? Melanoma therapy has changed dramatically, and goals of care are very important to discuss. Are the treatments that we're talking about, are they going to delay the disease coming back? Are they improving my overall survival? Or for metastatic patients, are these treatments allowing me to actually control my disease long term, or are these more focused on symptom relief? How is this going to impact my quality of life? What are the risks? The second thing that really should come up is, well, what is the next step? We have all these wonderful agents coming into our toolbox, but none of them are a guarantee of success. And any patient needs to know what their plan B, what their plan C is, and have a plan laid out, and not a, well, let's do this and then see what happens. So I would say ask your care provider, what do you see happening here, and which direction are we going to next, pending on what's going to happen? And integrated into that should be a clinical trials discussion. Because right now we have several agents that have long-term potential for controlling disease, but in the clinical trial arena, there are several exciting opportunities, and no one place is going to have every study out there. And so your healthcare provider needs to assure you that, you know, they're thinking about the bigger picture, that, yes, we have this, and a secondary plan may be a clinical trial, or our first plan may be a clinical trial, and here's what I know, here's some resources. Clinicaltrials.gov is an excellent resource that you can look at. It's overwhelming, but again, your healthcare provider can help steer you through there. So what's changing in melanoma is huge. You're going to hear some of the other exciting stuff in just a second. So I hope that gave you kind of a big overview of melanoma.
Oh, that was really excellent, Dr. Daniels. It's a really wonderful presentation and a lot of information for people, and I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Michael Postow. Dr. Postow is Assistant Attending Physician, Melanoma and Immunotherapeutics Service, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Postow is going to address how immuno-oncology has advanced the treatment options for melanoma, clinical trial updates, how research contributes to your treatment options, and managing side effects and discomfort. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Postow.
Thank you very much, Dr. Messner. It's a real privilege and honor to be invited to speak with everybody today about these very important topics. So building on what Dr. Daniels had mentioned, immuno-oncology, or strategies that we can use different treatments to boost the body's immune system to help fight off melanoma, has really been revolutionary in treating patients with melanoma and improving outcomes. As you heard just from Dr. Daniels, the old treatments with the immunotherapies that were available included treatments such as interleukin-2, which is a treatment that's delivered in the hospital and can result in substantial benefit in a subset of patients. There's additionally something called adoptive cell therapy, which we heard about a little before as well, which is delivered at specialized cancer centers around the country. It's a bit more of an involved process. that your doctor would need to discuss with you if that is something of interest. And many patients are also familiar with an immune therapy approach called interferon, which is an approach that's typically considered for some patients after resection of melanoma involving lymph nodes in a strategy called adjuvant treatment. However, what I'll be focusing on for the majority of our part of this discussion will be several strategies, particularly some of the new strategies of using the immune system that have just been recent developments over the past couple of years. And the first drug I'll talk about is a drug called ipilimumab, or its brand name is Yervoy. So this is an immune therapy drug that was approved by the FDA in 2011 because it had demonstrated improvements in patients living longer in two very large studies. Ipilimumab is a treatment that's given as an outpatient four times, each visit 3 weeks apart. If patients have good benefits from ipilimumab, typically patients are just followed over time, and it's important to talk with their doctor in terms of whether or not this would be appropriate treatment for you. Ipilimumab is just at the beginning of a big class of medications that, as we were hearing from Dr. Daniels as well, helps modify a patient's immune system to overall enhance its ability to control melanoma for a very long time, which is the goal of all of these treatments. The other very exciting class of antibody treatments similar to ipilimumab but of a bit of a different sort are a class of antibodies that target a receptor on cells called PD-1 for abbreviation, and that stands for Programmed Cell Death Receptor 1. This is an important target in the immune system and normally preventing the immune system from being too active. But we believe that tumors and other components in the immune system have ways of overexpressing this PD-1 type pathway, and by blocking it with different antibody strategies, we regain our own body's immune system to help fight off the melanoma. There are a number of different treatments that are being able to be developed in this area of this PD-1 pathway, and there are a number of agents that are demonstrating very, very early promise. As of this point right now, none of the PD-1 antibodies are yet approved by the FDA, and therefore participation in clinical trials is required to be treated with the PD-1 antibodies. I'll mention briefly that the results from the PD-1 antibodies have been from very large early studies, but it really demonstrates that in a substantial number of patients, we can have very great long-term control of the melanoma. The PD-1 trials are becoming available in increasing fashion over time in two large expanded access programs that have just opened. They can be found by going to www.clinicaltrials.gov. That's www.clinicaltrials.gov. And typing in the names of the two most clinically developed PD-1 antibodies. The first is called MK-3475, MK-3475, and the second is called nivolumab, N-I-V-O-L-U-M-A-B. The MK-3475 Expanded Access or Compassionate Use Program was the first to launch, and therefore your doctor may be familiar with ways that this treatment may be relevant. If you're looking for a PD-1 clinical trial, I would encourage you to discuss this possibility with your doctor and also to check out www.clinicaltrials.gov and type in into the search box MK-3475 or the drug name nivolumab, N-I-V-O-L-U-M-A-B, and there is some additional contact information that you will find there, which may help direct you into the right place. For these programs of expanded access of these particular two PD-1 drugs, they require patients to have previously been treated with ipilimumab, which is the FDA-approved immune therapy drug that we were speaking about previously. And secondly, for patients for whom their melanoma has something called a BRAF mutation, it requires prior treatment with a BRAF inhibitor drug or combination of drugs. And so discussing that possibility and whether or not PD-1 treatments on clinical trials would be appropriate for you is best to be discussed with your physician. But it is very exciting, some of the results that we are seeing with that particular immunotherapeutic opportunity. So in addition to that, I would like to share that there are a number of clinical trials that we're expecting some interesting information on in the near future. The field of melanoma investigation is really testing to see if one of these PD-1 drugs is proven to be better than ipilimumab. That question is not yet officially known because it is the subject of ongoing studies. So I would recommend that they are both thought of as good drugs for melanoma that may be appropriate and particular different contexts. Certainly ipilimumab is more widely available as it is already FDA approved. There are other studies involving combinations of ipilimumab and PD-1 receptor antibodies, and it is not yet clear if it is necessary to combine them both together or to give one and then the other. And what I would just say is that it's good to just try to get both if relevant at a particular time point. Again, it should be worth mentioning that none of the PD-1 receptor antibodies has been proven to be better than another, and they're all too early in their investigation to really make a comment on one being particularly better than another. So I would also just like to comment about how research in general can contribute to treatment options. First, many patients believe that clinical trials are, which is, I think, a bit of a misperception, that clinical trials are options to consider after other standard approaches. And with the number of promising new melanoma immune therapeutic approaches involving PD-1 and other combinations of immune therapies, I really encourage patients to discuss with their doctor whether a clinical trial is appropriate even as a first approach, because sometimes in the very first approach, the standard immune therapy drugs such as ipilimumab are being combined with other agents in new ways that really are very exciting, and we hope will have a lot of promise in improving the outcomes of patients with melanoma. The other issue that I would like to speak about for a few minutes deals with managing side effects and discomfort with some of these immune therapy drugs, but also just speaking about this in general while patients are undergoing any type of treatment for their cancer or related to the disease. The good news about these immune therapy approaches is that with experienced physician care, most side effects can be greatly minimized, and it's important that patients have very open communications with their doctors about expected side effects and how best to act upon them if they were to develop. Because these antibodies work and treatments work by boosting the body's immune system, some of the side effects can be related to this boost of the immune system. The most common side effect is an itchy rash, particularly with the ipilimumab treatment. That itchy rash can generally be treated very well with some topical steroid creams. And if patients have itch with that, there are different anti-itch pills that can be taken, some of which are available over the counter. Generally, we don't believe that this rash is particularly problematic, although it can be quite a nuisance. However, it's not typically believed to be a dangerous type of a side effect. Diarrhea is one of the side effects that can happen, particularly with the ipilimumab drug, and we discussed this with patients that in most situations it's just a little bit of diarrhea that can generally be handled with a change in diet or in some patients a short course of steroids that can be taken by mouth to quiet down some of the inflammation that may be created by some of these immune-boosting drugs. In rare situations, some patients need to come into the hospital for treatment for this diarrhea, but it is hopeful that the majority of patients would not have that severe of a side effect, particularly with discussing the side effect early with their doctor. Sometimes patients feel fatigued with these treatments, and it's very important to discuss this if this is occurring, as sometimes due to the inflammation from these agents, hormone levels can be a little bit off in the body, such as the thyroid hormone, and sometimes the treatment is just as easy as replacing some thyroid hormone with a pill to take once a day. And so it's very important to share all the side effects, if any, are being experienced with your doctor. Also very important are in addition to the physical symptoms, are psychosocial support systems and figuring out the logistics of all of the treatment planning and care that can go about as part of a search for a clinical trial and embarking on a new treatment program. And it's very important to be open and honest with your doctor with very normal feelings sometimes that patients may have about anxiety in terms of making sure we're finding the right type of treatment and what do we do if this treatment doesn't work. It's very important to share the concerns that one may have so as to normalize these feelings and to take care of them in an open and honest way. And so I just wanted to close with just a real vote of enthusiasm for this treatment class, and that these immune therapies in many patients can result in very long-term control of the melanoma. And some of the side effects are new types of side effects because they're not typical side effects that traditionally oncologists think about and patients think about with standard chemotherapies. They're a bit different, but in experienced centers and with experienced doctors and with open communication, they can really be minimized, and patients are in a good position to get the benefits from these drugs as best as possible. And I would additionally just like to put in the statement that our annual meeting with all of the big updates from ongoing clinical trials is coming next week, and if you're interested in following along on the internet, I think over the next week or two there will be a lot of press about new updated information about all of these antibodies, PD-1 antibodies, updated data from a number of the immune therapies we've been speaking about, so stay tuned for that. It will likely be a very interesting time, even over the next 2 weeks, particularly with the meeting that we're expecting next week. And with that, I'd like to thank Dr. Mesner for inviting me to speak, and I look forward to your questions at the conclusion of the call.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Pasta. That was really excellent, really outstanding, and thank you. And our next speaker is Shirley Goldman, and Ms. Goldman is an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, and she's going to address the free psychosocial support services that you can access from Cancer Care, as well as the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Goldman.
Thank you, Dr. Mesner. As Dr. Mesner mentioned, I am an oncology social worker, and I work with many people coping with melanoma and skin cancers. So I'd like to take just a few minutes to speak with you all about the importance of creating a support network as part of your medical care and how Cancer Care can be a part of that network. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Our programs include individual counseling, support groups, online groups, education programs, practical help such as how to navigate the healthcare system, as well as some limited financial assistance and chemotherapy copay assistance. All of our services are provided by licensed master's level oncology social workers, and they're all completely free of charge. Oncology social workers are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends, and we're also trained to help cancer patients and their families tackle the problems that accompany the disease, such as financial demands, physical changes, social adjustment, and psychological impact and care. Adjusting to and finding ways of coping with the diagnosis is such an important part of the healing process. And as you may know, cancer affects the whole person and the entire family. So asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is a sign of strength. Joining a support group is a way to connect with others who are going through a similar situation or have similar problems. Individual counseling can provide a space that is just yours to voice any concerns. These connections can help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer experience, and feeling well emotionally can help you better deal with the diagnosis and the treatments. At this time, Cancer Care is offering both patient and caregiver groups that are face-to-face in the New York area. We also have these groups available online nationally and internationally. These online groups are going to begin on Monday, June 2nd, so if you're interested, you can go to our website and register directly there. Our website is www.cancercare.org. The face-to-face groups that I had mentioned are currently also recruiting for the summer sessions, and they are scheduled to begin in July. And those are also still open if you're interested in participating. If you're interested in any of Cancer Care services, you can always call our helpline at 1-800-813-HOPE, or that's 1-800-813-4673, or visit our website again at www.cancercare.org. Our website is very comprehensive, and you can find a lot of information not only on support but on all of our programs, as well as your cancer diagnosis and the treatment. As we've learned a lot from today's program, there's a lot of information to digest, and our social workers can help you understand what it means for you and your family. We can help you prioritize, and if you need, can help to rehearse the questions that you may have for your medical team in order to get the answers and information that you need. So please remember that you're not alone. Cancer Care Services are here to help you. Thank you so much for your attention and the opportunity to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you very much, Shirley. That was wonderful and a really good resource for everybody to contact Cancer Care. We also have given you a list of many other organizations as well, but we certainly have a large staff of oncology social workers here to help you with some of your concerns and questions. Well, now we do have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions, and I'm going to ask Stephanie to bring all of our speakers on board and to explain how to queue up for questions to the audience. And we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. And if we don't get to your question, please do call us at the end of the call at 1-800-813-HOPE, and I'll give you that number again throughout the call. Okay? Stephanie?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Again, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone telephone to ask a question.
So we do have a question just in terms of family concerns, actually a couple of questions like that. When a person's been diagnosed with melanoma, the question is really from one of our online participants, what about their family and how can they, how should they be checked? Dr. Postow, could you address that?
Yes, sure. So thank you. It's a very good question about if a patient has a diagnosis of melanoma, what does it mean for family members? And I think the general medical recommendation is for first-degree family members of an affected individual, that would be brothers and sisters or sometimes children or even parents, depending on the age, to have them see their dermatologist and to take a good look at all the different types of moles and other skin findings that a patient's family members may have. It's not necessary that distant cousins and other more extended relatives typically do that, but in general, it's recommended that first-degree family relatives see a dermatologist just to have their skin checked. There are, unfortunately, no specific studies that really prove that this is absolutely mandatory, but it's generally just something that's a good idea. There are some genetic syndromes where multiple members of a family may be affected with melanoma, and that's a bit different than what I'm speaking about. And if you do have multiple family members involved with melanoma, parents and siblings or multiple children, I do think it would be worthwhile to seek medical attention for that in terms of inquiring whether genetic counseling would be necessary, and that would be based around a specific inherited melanoma syndrome, but that is fortunately not very common, and typically when a patient is affected, it's not part of this inherited syndrome.
Oh, thank you. And Dr. Daniels, did you want to add anything? Or
I'd only add that I totally agree that most melanomas are arising what we call de novo, and there's not a big genetic component to them. There's the family association that was outlined. When you take a family history, I also encourage what are the other cancers in the family. So breast cancer, uterine, colon, we find sometimes, it's not too common, but we find sometimes that there are family cancer syndromes that include other types of cancers, and so it's important to take a full family history for a melanoma patient.
Excellent, thank you. We have another question from one of our online participants. Are there certain medications that I should take caution about when on vacation and maybe in the heat for a long period of time? Dr. Daniels, could you address that?
Well, as far as melanoma is concerned, I'm not quite sure I have a recommendation there. Maybe the question is alluding to sunscreens and heat associated with sun exposure, and sun exposure is linked to melanoma incidence. And the pattern of sun exposure is important. And so we know that patients who get burned easily, they have a higher risk of having melanomas. And so what I generally counsel patients that are going to not risk, but enjoy the outdoors and enjoy the sun is enjoy it in moderation. And if there's a risk for getting burned, then sun protective strategies such as clothing, modifying the time that you're exposed, and even sunscreen usage to change that. But as far as a particular medication to stay away from, for melanoma's sake, I don't have one that I can comment on.
And actually, the other thing is, since the person has mentioned about vacation, and of course we are approaching summer in some parts of the world here, and so is there any, for people who are undergoing treatment, are there any particular guidelines in terms of when people are going to go away and be on vacation that would be helpful to keep in mind?
I can comment on that,
yes,
too.
Thank you.
Yes, definitely coordinate this with your provider, because certain drugs such as vemurafenib or the BRAF inhibitors cause sun sensitivity, and you need to just be aware of all the issues that are around the drug. But the immune modulators also are a concern. When I have patients that are traveling, minimally, they have all our numbers to call. I give them information about their drugs that they're getting, so that if something were to happen, and they're counseled on all the ifs, that if they were to go to the emergency room, that people are communicating about these drugs, because the toxicities that are associated with them that were mentioned, the skin irritation, the bowel irritation, they can go on to other things such as liver, glandular irritations that are difficult to appreciate, and when they happen is unpredictable. And so just preparing the patient with information, numbers to call, and in a few situations where I know patients are going to be out in the middle of nowhere, they're taking preventative medications with them with clear instructions on when to take them.
Thank you. And Dr. Postel, did you want to add anything to that in terms of just preparing for vacation and or being away?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really excellent summary. And just sometimes there are even pocket cards with this drug information, so that these can be presented to their official pocket cards, at least for the ipilimumab or Yervoy drug that many doctors can provide, just to if a patient is away and ends up needing medical attention, that can be provided to the appropriate local care team wherever the patient may be on a vacation or trip, to avoid them having to keep it all tracked themselves.
And you actually may be able to cover this already, but it comes up in a lot of our other calls where, sometimes a person may forget one of their meds or something happens. So do you want to just comment on, like, having a go-to bag where everything is kept so that you can, when you're going away, you have a list of what you need to take, or somehow we work with many people who sometimes just forget one of the meds when they're traveling or something like that. If you could comment on that, Dr. Postel.
So it is something to consider when packing a bag, and what goes in the check bag and what goes in a carry-on. Most of the supportive medications for these types of treatments that we're talking about are oral tablets. The one that comes to mind is if any patients are taking steroids to take care of a side effect, I would encourage taking that in a carry-on bag as opposed to a check bag, because those sometimes become problematic. Fortunately, the medications themselves are all intravenous infusions, so the immune therapies that we're speaking about, fortunately, it would be a little bit different that they wouldn't be something that could be forgotten, but the supportive medications are particularly of importance, and often patients will ask doctor teams to provide some documentation as to what they are for airlines in the event that a patient goes through security clearance and the security screeners are wondering what perhaps different creams or other types of things are perhaps to take care of a rash if that's a side effect experienced by the immune therapy. So more information from the physician team is always helpful, and everything in a carry-on, if possible, would always be recommended.
Excellent. Thank you. We have a question from another online participant. Can clinical trials still be done if a patient has been through IL-2? Is IL-2 considered first-line treatment of choice? Dr. Daniels, can you address that?
Sure. Interleukin-2, IL-2, Proleukin, it is a first-line choice in select patients with metastatic disease, and the select means IL-2, as Dr. Pasto said, is a difficult therapy. It's hospital-based. It's given until we see immune activation, which is managed in that acute setting. So it's not for everybody. But because it has durable long-term cancer control rates to it, it's always a consideration for a patient. In general, there are hundreds of clinical trials with different eligibility criteria. There may be some trials out there that exclude prior treatments, including interleukin-2. And it goes back to when one is planning a therapy strategy, what is the goal? If the goal is cure, what's my path in terms of which therapies I have lined up? And interleukin-2 could be a first stop on that therapy plan, but you want to make sure it fits in with plan B and C, because none of these, as I mentioned, are 100% effective. And so you have to be strategic about lining up your therapies. So in general, I think interleukin-2 is still a good first choice, but it needs to be put into the context of the patient and the whole care plan.
Awesome. Thank you. And another question from one of our online participants has to do with a frequency of having a lot of moles. And the question is that I have a lot of moles. Am I at higher risk of developing melanoma? Dr. Pasta, could you address that?
So more so than the number of moles, the nature of the moles, I think, is something that some dermatologists have mentioned can put an individual at higher risk. And I think what's important, if you do have a lot of moles, that you just see a dermatologist so that they can keep a close eye on all of them. And I think some dermatology practices are using photography and other types of new technologies, such as one specific example, dermoscopy, which is where a dermatologist can use a special type of skin visualization tool to really characterize the moles. So, more moles does mean a little bit more attention from a dermatologist would perhaps be worthwhile, but it's more the character of the mole and, what they look like, which would be something of more concern. But it just falls into the good category of just trying to be safe in the sun and have skin looked at frequent intervals, such that if any were to become melanoma at any point in time, they can be cured just with a surgical resection and that patients wouldn't go on to more disease in the future.
Thank you. And we have a general question here about melanoma. Is there a cure or just remission? How long does a remission generally last? Now, this is But the general question, and I realize that we can't be specific exactly, but Dr. Daniels, if you could just address this in a general way in terms of melanoma as a disease. I know you've covered some of this already, but if you could say a bit more.
So cure, as I kind of opened up, I took a time to just plug for a second that early detection And finding a lesion early when it's thin, hasn't had a chance or a lower risk of spreading to other places, removing that lesion, there is a high chance that we can cure a patient. So early detection is one way to get to cure. For advanced disease, cancers that have spread through the bloodstream or infected lymph nodes, cure is still possible. And, you know, cure comes with a lot of baggage with it. What does cure mean? Is a cancer patient ever cured? Because the impact of the cancer is always there. But from a clinical point of view, we've seen patients that have gone on with measurable disease treated with therapies that are 20 or 30 years into complete remission of their cancer. Are they cured? I'm an optimist, and I say yes. We know with immune therapies, particularly we have data with interleukin-2, that when you go 2 years without seeing evidence of cancer coming back, that's a good indication that whatever relationship's been reestablished with that cancer in the body, it just is not coming back. In fact, when you look at the risk of dying from melanoma 2 or 3 years in a melanoma survivor from metastatic disease, the chance of melanoma coming back is actually lower than somebody with stage 1 melanoma that was diagnosed 2 to 3 years earlier. So when we're seeing these remissions with these immune therapies, they do seem to be durable. They do seem to be setting up for long-term remission, and I like to characterize that as a cure.
That's excellent. Thank you. Dr. Pasta, did you want to add anything? Or?
I just add a specific mention that the patients that are also treated with ipilimumab, we have long-term follow-up that there are patients that have had successful treatment with ipilimumab as well for nearly 10 years now that are still doing very well, and it's really, you know, 7 to 10 years and counting. And that's the longest follow-up we have based upon how old the drug is, but there are a group of people that have these great outcomes similar to IL-2, also to ipilimumab, and so that's something that we're also still hoping to see additionally with the PD-1 drugs. It's a little earlier with the PD-1 drugs, but it's something that we're seeing in multiple different immune therapies in addition to IL-2.
And it's really helpful to the audience to know about the follow-up of people over time at that kind of and collecting that information is so important. And can you say more about that, Dr. Pasta? Because that really means a lot to, I think, our audience, that the data is being collected over time so they can hear that information that you just gave.
The patients treated with these immune therapies, IL-2 is the oldest, so we have the longest follow-up, as Dr. Daniels was mentioning about IL-2. However, with ipilimumab, what we've collected is data up to 10 years, and we know that there are patients that have good outcomes from that treatment, 10 years and counting, that are still doing well. So we wish it was everybody, but we know that it exists, and that's why we try to offer these treatments for patients at the appropriate time if we can. And PD-1, over time, it's our expectation that will continue to improve the number of patients that are alive and healthy and living their lives. And even if they have melanoma still in their bodies, that they're able to go about their life, do the activities that they like to do, participate in all the family events that they want, and just be a normal person that maybe needs to see a doctor every now and then and perhaps get treatment every few weeks or something, but that the quality of life is maintained and longevity is maintained for a very long time.
Well, thank you. Excellent. And our next question, I think we have a telephone question now. Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Shirley J. Your line is open.
Yes, I had a few squamous cell cancers, and the dermatologist gave me Eldara, although I had the generic Mimiquimod, to use on one spot on my right temple. And it made it look so, like she said, and it went away. And then 3 or 4 months later, I started getting things popping out on my arms and my back, and it kind of got out of control by the end of the year. So she gave me desonide cream, and that calmed down the immune system, and now I haven't had anything popping out. But it makes me wonder, you know, are there things inside that should be coming out and treated, or is it okay just to go on and enjoy life?
Well, thank you for that question. I'm going to ask Dr. Daniels if you could address that in a general way, because we don't have all the specifics. Is that possible, Dr. Daniels, if you could give some just general guidelines around this question?
Sure. I mean, I'll jump to the last part. It's just get out and enjoy life. Absolutely. That's the point of all this, is to get out and enjoy life. So you mentioned, though, this was a squamous cell, and squamous cell is lumped into what we call non-melanoma skin cancers. And its relationship with some of the treatments we've been talking about is a little different. Eldera is an immune treatment. It's topical. It goes on the skin. It's been used a little bit in melanoma. Its value is still being defined. And, you know, all these things, as you mentioned, you saw things popping out. You had appropriate treatment, it sounds like, taken care of. When we have a skin cancer come up, as Dr. Pasto was mentioning, we need to elicit the help of a dermatologist to monitor things. Certainly self-monitoring is important. Besides the photos that a dermatologist can take, we now all have smartphones that take photos and help us keep track of new lesions. All that said, that can get totally overwhelming, so I'll jump back to, yes, please get out and enjoy life. The skin is there. We need to keep track of it, keep track of changes, but just keep attentive.
Excellent. And Dr. Prostad, do you want to add anything?
No, I just say sometimes to my patients, too, just as an expression to take home, that you can't live in a cave, and this is the world, and just being outside and doing things, and, you know, I realize that melanoma is something that we have to be thinking about, but it's not a reason not to go outside and enjoy, and just being careful is the key, and I have some patients that are just so afraid to go out into the sun, and I really encourage them that that this is important to live life as best as can be done with everything going on.
Well, this is really very helpful to hear, and I wonder if there's any guidelines around just there were a number of online questions about the sunscreens and which ones should they be using and how should they do that, and what are the different messages on the on mean. So I wondered if you could comment on that, Dr. Pasto.
So sunscreens are typically the number that typically is most important for the sunscreen is what's called SPF, or sun protection factor, and there are a number of different numbers ranging from very low single-digit numbers up to, you may see some numbers well over 50, and typically what these numbers mean are basically how protective it is against the sun. The higher the number in general is more protective. However, I would caution that once the numbers get very high, really over 30 or so, the incremental benefit of the higher number becomes less and less. So, you know, a big difference between SPF 5 and 15 or even 15 to 30, but between 50 and 70, for example, is less of a benefit. So typically a recommendation is to at least have SPF 30 or above. Some dermatologists will recommend different numbers, but I think also on these bottles are the types of things like waterproof or water resistant. And from my understanding of the situation, nothing is ever 100% waterproof. There may be some water resistant types of sunscreen, but the bottom line really is if you're in the water a lot and out in the sun, reapplying sunscreen more than you think you may need is very important. And also applying it even before going out in the sun, so to allow appropriate time for it to seep into the skin to be protective, is very important. And not forgetting particular parts of the body, like the top of the ears, which can be sometimes forgotten, or the neck or the back of the neck, in addition to the nose and cheeks and forehead. And also to keep in mind that sometimes clothes themselves can have UV protective labels on them. And there are ways to have special ultraviolet protective clothing if that's a particular concern, because not all clothing offers complete protection against the UV light.
Excellent. And Dr. Daniels, do you want to add anything? Or?
Yeah, it's a common question because, you know, we struggle with that there's a lot of marketing out there with less solid data to help guide things. But I completely agree about the SPF comments. And I just steer people towards the FDA website. The FDA has looked at sunscreens very carefully. They're in the process of changing labeling for them. They have some great information out there that kind of spells out a lot of these issues that we're still struggling with as far as what to exactly tell patients. Again, sounds a little bit mixed that we're saying, go outside, enjoy life, and yet there's a link between melanoma and the sun, and how do we modulate that the best?
That's an excellent point. Someone else asked about broad spectrum. Is that another issue for people to consider when they're getting these products?
Yeah, and again, it's addressed on the FDA site, but UV comes generally, there's three general wavelengths, A, B, and C. What gets down to Earth, where we are, is A and B, and broad spectrum refers to sunscreens that address both those wavelength categories, and each has its own potential damaging effect on patients or the population. And if you're out there, you want to make sure that the sunscreen is blocking those biologically active wavelengths of UV, and that would be broad spectrum.
Excellent. Well, I have to thank our speakers. You've all been extraordinary. This has been an extraordinary call. I want to thank you all. I want to thank all of you who've asked such really wonderful questions online and also on the telephone. These are good questions that really enhance the call today. And I want to thank all of you who've been listening. I want to remind you that this is a one-hour education workshop, and in planning a program like this, we recognize that you have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And with that in mind, I do want to remind all of you that Cancer Care is available as a resource for all of you to call. If you have a question that you didn't get to ask, you can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE or visit our website at www.cancercare.org, and that information is in all your materials. We have a staff of many oncology social workers who are here, like Shirley, to answer your questions, to offer you support. We do offer individual and group counseling. We offer a service both on the telephone and online. So we have many online support groups and telephone groups. We realize how busy everybody is, and so these sometimes really help people to get help without having to feel a need to travel to get to a place for that. We also offer many workshops like this one. We have many workshops coming up, and indeed, Dr. Postel mentioned the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting that's coming up in about a week, and we are actually going to be doing a large-scale teleconference series, a Connect workshop series on that, and we will be also addressing melanoma on that program as well. Dr. Daniels will be speaking at that program, and so please stay tuned. You'll be getting information about that as well. But most important, and we also offer financial and practical assistance to people, so we try to cover the gamut of the different kinds of need that you might have. But most importantly, as we are about to conclude the program, we don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with cancer. We want you to know that you're part of a community of support and that we're here to help you. And we are simply a telephone call away, and for our international participants, our website away. So do contact us. And also do get out, and as I think as our speakers have said, and take advantage of your life and enjoy it, and do take good care. We have many programs coming up, so please do stay tuned for them, and you'll be getting lots of information about them as well. Thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.